All right, so check it out. You know how we talk about all the weird stuff they sneak into our food, our air, or even our clothes? Yeah, it turns out most shirts are basically made of plastic. You're sweating in chemicals, man. That's why I switched to Hypernatural. It's wild. They make their fabric from jade stone and crab shells. Yeah, you heard me right. Jade and crab shells. The jade keeps you naturally cool, like literally drops your skin temp down a few degrees. And the crab shell fibers, they fight odor and help your skin stay fresh all day long. So you can wear it longer, wash it less, and not smell like a dirty old gym towel. They use a fancy cotton, mother-of-pearl buttons, and zero junk. No polyester, no chemical dyes, and none of that synthetic garbage. It's clean, it's sustainable, and honestly, it's just cool gear. You can wear it anywhere, the gym, the range, whatever, and it looks legit. Go to hypernatural.com and use my code ZEROSIGNAL at checkout, and you'll get yourself 20% off. And get yourself the cleanest, most comfortable shirt you've ever worn. That's Hypernatural, nature engineered for comfort.
You're tuned into Zero Signal, a show about what they won't say and what you're probably already thinking. No fluff, no filters, no bullshit. Let's crack it open.
At this time, I'm going to ask you to fasten your seatbelts.
Welcome back to Zero Signal with your hosts David and Jay Green. So Dave, you ever notice how every conspiracy has that one moment, that one bizarre detail where you go, okay, that's too crazy to be real. And then you realize it's actually true and has happened?
Yeah, you're half asleep at 2 a.m. scrolling some sketchy forum, reading about mind control, secret drug experiments, CIA safe houses with mirrors and prostitutes, and you're thinking, all right, man, this is fan fiction. Then you look at the declassified files and yeah, that actually did happen.
Welcome to MK Ultra. The program's so wild, the official version already sounds like a bad dream.
And tonight we're pulling on a thread that starts with Cold War paranoia and runs straight through LSD experiments, hypnosis sessions, sensory deprivation tanks, midnight brothels wired with cameras, and a government chemist with a clearance who lived like a low-key Bond villain.
And we're talking about Nick Gottlieb, the man who asked, what if we could erase minds, rewrite it, or bend it? And the CIA said, cool, here's a big check.
And the best part, most of the documents explaining what actually did happen. The dirty details were ordered destroyed in 1973. So what we know is actually the tip of the iceberg.
Which means tonight, we're not just talking history, we're talking puzzles with missing pieces, scattered testimonies, and experiments so unethical they make a science fiction look soft.
And we'll also get into the proven stuff, Montreal depattering the safe houses, the drugging of their own employees. But then we're also walking right up to the border, maybe over the border, into the conspiratorial spillover, the assassins, the cults, the counter culture, the Manson rumors, and did they actually succeed with these experiments?
Because the real question isn't, did MKUltra happen? It's, how far did it go? And what was ever made out of it? And what happened to those shredded documents? And what was in them?
So settle in, turn down the lights, grab your popcorn, and maybe don't trust your memory for the next hour.
This is Zero Signal, and tonight, we're opening the files they tried to erase. MKUltra was a covert CIA behavioral modification program that was established back in 1953, and it mainly ran through the CIA technical services staff. This involved illegal human experimentation, the use of drugs, especially LSD, for whatever reason, it was heavy in psychedelics. It also involved hypnosis, sensory deprivation, and electric shock. And to explain to the audience, if you don't know what electric shock is where they put these pads on your head and send high voltage currents to your brain. These methods were used on unwitting subjects to see if human behavior could be controlled or manipulated for intelligence or warfare purposes. Many records were deliberately destroyed in 1973 when the program was actually terminated, and this destruction was on orders from the CIA director, Richard Helms. So what we largely know today is from surviving financial and administrative records, and in 1963, the CIA Inspector General published a report. And in the 1975 Church Committee investigations and the 1977 Senate MKUltra hearings. So as you can see, this was heavily scrutinized by our elected government. during its roughly 20-year tenure as a secret program. The official scope from the Senate and CIA records included that MKUltra roughly contained 149 sub-projects with roughly 80 institutions involved. Most of these institutions were universities, hospitals, prisons, and pharma companies. Many didn't even know the CIA was funding their work. Experiments included LSD and other hallucinogens, barbiturates, stimulants, and drug cocktails, hypnosis and hypnoconditioning, sensory deprivation and isolation, sleep deprivation and sleep rooms, electroconvulsive treatments paired with drugs and recorded messages, which many refer to as psychic driving. The core aim of this program was to figure out if there was a way to break resistance, control memory, create amnesia, or shape behavior for interrogation, espionage, and covert operations. There was also a claim that it was used to instill split personalities into people. So one personality could carry this secret information, this code, all the knowledge that a person would have to be a covert agent. When they got to the other side, the person receiving the information could use a trigger word to bring this second personality up to the consciousness. They could have a conversation, exchange information, exchange secrets, and they could use another word to trigger back their primary personality. And in retrospect, this primary personality had no awareness of the second personality within their psyche.
And I think the interesting thing is MK Ultra didn't just appear out of nowhere. It was born in the Cold War when American intelligence was terrified that the Soviets and Chinese had discovered this brainwashing. Prisoners of war were coming back with broken minds, strange confessions, and stories that look like science fiction. The question in Washington became simple and quite ugly. If the enemy can do this, we can do it better. So the CIA built a program to weaponize psychology. The ideal was to find ways to control a person at the deepest level, not just to get them to talk, but to make them different, more compliant, more suggestible, or just in the darkest theories, programmable. The people running this weren't horror writers. They were scientists, doctors, bureaucrats, working with government money and national security cover. Conspiracy researchers look at this origin story and see a moral switch flipping. Once you decide that national security justifies anything, then voluntary consent, basic ethics, and even the ideal of a stable identity become optional. MK Ultra, in this view, is what happens when a powerful state decides that human mind is just another battlefield to dominate.
Yeah, I think it's an important thing to piggyback off your point. So a lot of this stuff started after World War II and during the early part of the Cold War. And officials were terrified that the Soviets had these show trials and confessions from spies or even in certain instances, soldiers, where the unwilling participant essentially spouted whatever the party doctrine was at the time, confessing to things that they didn't do, confessing to things that they had willingly told the Soviets, or I guess in some cases, the North Koreans, because we had a war back in the 50s in Korea. So a lot of these prisoners of war endured a lot of these tortures, these psychedelic experiments, the sleep deprivation. So when these guys came back home, they seemed to really tout the Soviet Communist Party line and really believe what they had been programmed to believe. And it took a lot of them a long time to get deprogrammed. So CIA director at the time, Alan Dulles, explicitly claimed that Soviets and Chinese were way far ahead in brain warfare and argued that the U.S. needed to catch up or suppress them. So it's also interesting that Nazi and Imperial Japanese have a pretty significant legacy with some of the development. As we all know, Operation Paperclip. But it's interesting to see that the Nazis and Imperial Japanese had a pretty big hand in some of these techniques and some of this research. So post-war, the U.S. secretly recruited Nazi and Axis scientists via Operation Paperclip, including some involved in unethical human experimentation. And we all know a lot of the horror stories that the Japanese and Nazis put people through during their reign of terror back in the 40s. So the U.S. was interested in the broader climate of mining enemy atrocities for data, and this kind of helped normalize the idea that ethics could be bent for national security. So this kind of points back to direct Nazi to MK Ultra pipelines that are often claimed in conspiracies documented links exist where the conceptual level, but the direct evidence is a little bit fuzzy, but it doesn't take a big logical leap to see their fingerprints all over this inception.
I always ask myself, like, maybe this existed back in the day and then ethics stepped in and put it into it. But I think we see a continuation of events. If you look at Guantanamo Bay and the humiliation of prisoners and sleep deprivation and waterboarding, a lot of times I think they're doing another version of MKUltra, and it never truly stopped. And even if we have some ethics here in the United States, perhaps other countries don't, and they're continuing on this way with different versions of the truth serum. But, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about that as we get into the show. But I think one of the most disturbing parts of MKUltra is where it ultimately happened. We're not talking about secret bunkers in the mountains. We're talking about normal looking places with very respectable signs on the door, universities, research hospitals, mental health clinics, prisons, places where people go for help or education or rehabilitation. Money flows into these institutions through the front foundations and fake grants with friendly names. I think on paper, it was behavioral science, human ecology, stress research, and underneath, it could be something very different. Heavy drug doses, sleep deprivation, electroshock, and forced hypnosis. Patients who believe they were getting this cutting edge treatment instead of becoming these test subjects, sometimes without clear consent, sometimes with no real ideal what they actually signed up for. From a conspiracy standpoint, you know, this is kind of the masterstroke. You don't need a secret island when you can turn to the existing system into your lab. A doctor in a white coat, a professor with a grant, a therapist with a clipboard, these become the new face of the Black Project. And once that normalizes, it raises a scary question. How many studies and trials over the decades have quietly doubled as data collection for people you never actually see the authors list? And it's getting ingrained. And I always ask myself, and maybe you have an answer for this one, but like, how in the hell did the government get so many highly credentialed people to sign up for this experimentation?
Yeah, to go back to your point, I think as long as humans have been alive, we've been trying to convince and control one another. I think MKUltra is just the official rendition of man trying to control man, trying to control the belief systems, trying to control the narrative, trying to brainwash. And we can go into a bunch of examples of how this is reflected in modern day society. I think with everything in the government, everything is very compartmentalized. So you give out grants to scientists, psychologists. One guy might be studying a drug. One guy might be studying certain forms of psychotherapy. In the aggregate, the government's kind of pulling all these tools together. And I think at a certain stage, the government sees what works, what drugs work, what psychotherapy works. And then at the top, you may have a handful of guys taking all these tools and putting them together and then using them to manipulate, control, and brainwash at the final stages. But I think in the initial stages, some of these scientists are just investigating whatever they're interested in at the universities or in the hospitals and not really knowing what the ultimate outcome is. So for, I think, 90% of them, it's just one piece of the puzzle. The guys at the top look at the data and they see that Project A may have worked, Project B maybe not. So as time goes on, they're taking the cream of the crop, these methods, learning them themselves, and then implementing them as an aggregate to use on these individuals that they're trying to control.
Yeah, it's twisted because it's not, hey, we're going to shoot this gas into the air at our enemy and let's see what it does to them. It's like literally people in the CIA are drugging each other unbeknownst to them and slipping stuff into their drinks to see what works and what doesn't. To me, it's just wild. I mean, you go to a bar, you're my brother, but I'm going to test this chemical on you and see how it goes and see what you do. Like, it's for shits and giggles, I guess. I don't really know, but it seems very twisted from me. And when we're talking about drugs here, MKUltra is almost inseparable from LSD. The CIA became obsessed with this new psychedelic, wondering if it could be a truth serum, a chaos weapon, or this like mind control tool. They bought it in bulk and started slipping it into people's lives. Prisoners, soldiers, psychiatric patients, and random civilians in bars and brothels that were actually government safe houses wired with microphones and cameras so they could watch their behavior. Now, here's where the conspiracy twist kind of kicks in. A few years later, LSD explodes into the 1960s counterculture. It goes from this secret experiment to music, art, protest, and entire lifestyles that revolve around it. The same substance that was being tested in these hidden clinics suddenly became became the sacrament of a generation. Was that just organic cultural spread? Or did some of those tabs, those gurus, and those scenes have a quiet push from intelligence operations that had already mapped the drug effects? One theory says LSD was intentionally allowed to spill out into mass experimentation. They flood the use with acid and you study how they behave. Maybe you fragment movements that might otherwise become politically organized and dangerous. And maybe you get a generation that's easier to manage and influence because it's tripping instead of marching. I think in this view, the 60s weren't just this spontaneous uprising. They were also in part this MK Ultra field test.
Yeah, and I think we'll explore some of those rabbit holes as we get a little bit further into the episode. But I wanted to digress to your point. Like, why do you do it on your own people and not do it on the enemy? I think the reason we do it within these institutions and we do it on our own people is because it's in a somewhat controlled environment. So you can observe, you can record data. It'd be very difficult just to send something or someone over into, let's just say hypothetically, Russia or China or whatever other country in the world, spray this chemical, dose the water supply, but you're not really in a position to record anything. You're not in a position to observe. So you're letting it go and then you're out via drone or whatever delivery method you may have. The only thing you really kind of can see is the aftermath. But there are so many unaccounted variables. You're not really sure how the chain reaction unfolded. But when you do it on your own people, in your own institutions, in your own, within your own borders, you're able to observe, you're able to make the logical conclusions that you want to see and so on. So I think that's why they do it on their own people, because it's a great batch of guinea pigs that are within a confined space and confined institute that you can be readily available to draw these conclusions without potentially getting caught or not having the ability to see what's happening.
Do you think the government actually allowed it, like this LSD, to get out there so that they could expand their pool? And perhaps was there something going on in the country that the government was trying to lead with a heavier hand to control the populace, and maybe this is one way they thought they could do it?
Yeah, I think so. We hear stories all the time about the government experimenting on their own people, especially people in the military. The Tuskegee experiments where they gave people syphilis. And they're just giving people horrible diseases, horrible drugs, and they do it with the intention of using it for warfare. And I'm under the impression now that we're under constant psychological warfare, be it through social media, be it through television, be it through just about anything that's out there anymore. And LSD can make your brain hyper pliable. It makes you super suggestible. It causes you to trip. You can have good hallucinations. You can have bad hallucinations. People, even the tech bros in Silicon Valley, are experimenting with psilocybin and other type of hallucinogenics. And a lot of them microdose, but they microdose because they claim that it helps open and create new neural pathways so their brain can be more plastic, make it easier to learn stuff. I think that translates, at least in the government's point of view, into making your brain more suggestible. You're able to implant these ideas. And I find it interesting that they introduced LSD to society, made it mainstream, made it cool. Like we're seeing now with marijuana. Marijuana is pretty mainstream. People use it all the time. And now you're, like I said, with the advent of these tech bros, and even Joe Rogan talks about it, talking about taking psychedelics. You hear it everywhere. DMT, all these weird things that really mess with your mind. So they're trying to mainline it into society. And I think that opens doors in your head for them to implant suggestions and steer social opinion, steer influence. And I think when you boil it down, brainwash the populace. We see it all the time in these cults that they use the same type of strategies. It's, again, I think you're getting back to psychology 101. It's repetition, and you need to induce a drug that will open doors and make you feel good in some instances and make you feel terrified in others. It's just a way to screw with your head.
Yeah, that's a good point. I really think we should do an episode on what direction is America going in, because I feel like post-1940s, this country is on a downward trajectory when it comes to moral values, a connected full home that doesn't have divorce, and just the moral principle that we stand on is really treading in the wrong direction. So it might be interesting to do an episode of where it's heading. And if you want a case study that feels like pure horror, you can look at the Montreal Connection. In one psychiatric hospital, patients check in for everyday issues, anxiety, depression, postpartum, postpartum struggles. They were told that they were getting advanced treatment, and what some of them got instead was a nightmare. Massive electroshocks, heavy drugs, sensory deprivations, and recorded messages played over and over while they were sedated or half conscious. The apparent goal was to wipe the mind back to a childlike state and then rebuild it through repetition. I think when we think about that, not treating symptoms, but trying to erase and rewrite a person, some patients came out with shattered memories, scrambled identities, and missing years of their lives gone. They weren't told that they were in a secret program. They were told they were being helped by these people. This isn't just one unethical experiment. It's a crucial proof of concept that modern Western hospital can be turned into a personality reconstructed factory. Once you know that happened, even once, being a respectable front, you start asking how many other places tried similar things under different names with better security and no paper trail left behind. I can't get past that. Meaning that if you're experiencing anxiety and you go to a hospital and they're like, just give me some medication, help me out. And then going from having anxiety to like being tortured and going through these horrible experiences by people that we trust, by people that take Hippocratic oaths that says they're going to take care of you and look out for your welfare is insanity to me. It's so hardcore and evil.
No, man, I think you make a good point there. Sometimes I wonder, and I probably need to do a little bit more research on this, but think about the pervasive use of SSRI use in modern society. Like all these drugs are relatively new, going back 20, 30 years. And you hear horror stories all the time about people getting on these drugs and it might make them feel better for a little bit. But when they decide it's time to come off, if they've been on them long enough, they have horrible withdrawals. And I'm wondering if MK Ultra didn't contribute to some of these psychological drugs that people really struggle with today. And so I think in some cases, they really help. And in other cases, I think they're overprescribed. And I wonder why. I think they're great for people that have really bad out of control psychological issues, but I know people can just be going through a really bad time in their life and they hand these drugs out like candy. I don't think it takes a whole lot of effort to get them. All you have to go in there and say, I feel sad, I feel anxious, and within 5 minutes you'll have a prescription. And it seems like it takes a lot of dialing in to see what prescription works. So you might go on one, you may not feel any better. Heck, you might end up feeling worse, and then they switch you to another one. So you're introducing a different chemical into your system every 2 to 3 months until you find something that may work for you. But just looking at the data, you can compare some of these SSRIs and other psychotropic type drugs and compare them to natural things like herbs, vitamins, lifestyle changes, diet changes, and they're not nearly as effective. And I know a lot of people tie these into like these mass shootings, these school shootings. I think there may be some correlation there. But if you even look at the warning labels on some of these medicines, it says it may want you to commit off yourself. It may want you to do horrible, unspeakable acts of taking someone's life. So they admit that these are some of the side effects. And there's countless stories about people going off these meds and losing all their emotions, losing all their cares, losing all their inhibitions. And it's just scary. But I kind of want to cycle back a bit to what were the forefather programs to MKUltra. So there was a program back in 1950 called Project Bluebird, and it focused on protecting U.S. personnel from hostile interrogation. So this used like drugs, hypnosis, special interrogation techniques to compel information. So just to boil that all down, what they were trying to do was give their soldiers or assets in the field, CIA, etc., what have you, and give them techniques to resist the interrogation tactics of the enemy. So that program only really lasted about a year, so they say, and that evolved into Project Artichoke, which was created in 1951. And so this was the successor to Bluebird. It was more aggressive. The experiments included on whether a person can be made to commit certain acts against their will. So now you're seeing some of the telegraphing of what MKUltra really was set up to explore. And again, you have the use of heavy drugs, hypnosis, psychological pressure, and this would be put on detainees and expendable subjects. So sometimes I hear that word expendable. It's such a horrible term, expendable. It's essentially saying that your life doesn't matter. Your mental health, emotional health, spiritual health are of no consequence to us. And who defines who's expendable and who's not? That's a scary one. And this ultimately led to MKUltra, which is essentially Artichoke 2.0. It was larger, more institutionalized within the prisons, hospitals, like you mentioned, Montreal. And it was heavily focused, like you said before, on LSD and pharmaceuticals. Look at the timeline of the inception of MKUltra. So the early 40s and early 50s, you have the setup. So 1947 to 1949, the CIA is founded. Covert ops and psychological warfare divisions grew rapidly. In 1950, you have Project Bluebird. In 51, Bluebird becomes Artichoke, and it focuses on special interrogation, including drugs and hypnosis experiments. 1953 to 1963, this was MKUltra's quote-unquote main active period. You have conspiracy theorists that now think the program has evolved to new names. It's gotten deeper and more occult in its processes involving both the paranormal and sort of supernatural. So not to digress too much, but in April of 1953, CIA Director Alan Dulles approves MKUltra. It's ran by Sidney Gottlieb, the head of the technical services staff. 1953 through 63, this again was the peak MKUltra activity. Contracts were given to universities and hospitals. LSD is given to mental patients, prisoners, drug addicts, military personnel, and some ordinary citizens. And this was often without consent. I would presume that 99.9 was given without consent. In 1963, you have the Inspector General report and a partial rollback of the program. An internal CIA inspector warns that MKUltra is ethically and legally dangerous and poorly supervised. Some projects are scaled back and rebranded. The name MKUltra begins to phase out. In the mid-60s and early 70s, you have follow-up programs. This is the quiet phase. Certain sub-projects roll into successor or parallel programs, and we'll get a little bit into MKSearch, MKNaomi, and others. But again, we'll save that for a little bit later in the episode. MKUltra remains mostly entirely unknown to the public. And now this is when it starts to get a little bit sketchy. So in 1973, you have the document destruction. CIA Director Richard Helms orders most of MKUltra files destroyed. This is apparently done to prevent future exposure. Some financial records did survive, and they survived mostly due to being misfiled or stored elsewhere. And in 1975 through 77, you have the exposure and the Senate hearing. So in 75, the Rockefeller Commission and Church Committee begin exposing domestic CIA abuses, including MKUltra. In 1977, you have the Senate Subcommittee on Health and Scientific Research, and they hold public hearings on the program. Survivors testify, and Sidney Gottlieb appears on subpoena. And the results of this report is ongoing document releases, mostly through the Freedom of Information Act and class action lawsuits, where more documents emerge over the decades. In 2024, you have a large collection of CIA mind control documents that is published by the National Security Archive and ProQuest. And in 2025, a newly published material includes top secret depositions from Sidney Gottlieb to the Church Committee staff, providing more detail on LSD experiments, assassination-related research, and special interrogations.
Yeah, to talk about how twisted some of this stuff is, when we talk about Project Monarch, we are really talking about trauma-based mind control. And Monarch shows up in a lot of survivor testimonies. The claim is pretty simple, but absolutely brutal. Certain groups used extreme trauma, ritual abuse, staged deaths, sexual violence, and psychological terror to deliberately fracture the mind into separate compartments. Each compartment, or altar, could then be programmed for different purposes. In this model, trauma is a side effect. It's like the main tool. They put a child through enough horror, and their mind protects itself by splintering. Each fragment can then be shaped. One altar for normal life, and one for espionage, or one for seduction, one for violence. And trigger words, symbols, hand signs, songs. Switch these altars on and off. The front personality has no idea what the others are doing. To the outside world, you're dealing with one person. Internally, it's a whole cast running different scripts. And Monarch is where MKUltra merges with cults, elite circles, and generational abuse in our narrative. The ideal is that once this kind of programming works, it becomes a long-term investment. It creates controlled assets who can be placed in entertainment, politics, and espionage, all while looking like regular citizens. Now, whether you believe the testimonies or not, Monarch represents the logical extreme of MKUltra's mindset. Not just influencing behavior, but redesigning the human soul through pain, which is just absolutely horrifying. Like, how evil must you be to come up with something like this? Obviously, trauma does things to people. We've seen it many times when real trauma occurs, a death of a parent, a death of a loved one, or abuse by a loved one, or whatever the case may be, it fractures the mind. But to intentionally do this to somebody, to take advantage of them, it's like we're putting a bunch of child molesters in office. Let them free and run experiments on people. So this stuff, though, maybe makes good topics for movies, or I think you said that Stranger Things is about this. I've never seen that show. It's pretty twisted stuff of what they're doing to folks in order to gain control over them. A lot of people, I remember watching a movie with Denzel Washington a long time ago called The Manchurian Candidate. It's one of the most famous MKUltra conspiracy branches is the ideal of this Manchurian Candidate, a mind control assassin who doesn't know they're actually an assassin. And it goes like this. You take a person, you break them down through trauma, drugs, and psychological manipulation. Then you build artificial identities and triggers. A phrase, a song, a symbol, something innocuous becomes the key that unlocks a programmed behavior. Pick up a gun, pull a trigger, and then forget. Every time a strange, seemingly senseless assassination or mass shooting happens, people start hunting for MKUltra fingerprints. Was this person in the military? Did they have a history of psychiatric treatment? Did they participate in any studies or programs? Are there weird gaps in their story, contradictory memories, flat effect, or robotic behavior? To most people, those are signs of mental illness or stress. But to someone with MKUltra in mind, those can look like glitches or conditioning. This line of thinking leads to a chilling possibility that some events we write off as random horror might in theory be carefully designed demonstrations, not just to eliminate a target, but to generate fear, headlines, and public support for tighter controls. You can manufacture an assassin, you can manufacture a crisis. And if you can manufacture a crisis, you can steer policy without ever firing a visible shot. Perhaps you make somebody take that shot for you. And I don't know if it works or if it doesn't work, but it's some scary stuff if you think you can get people to react with these trigger words after this programming, all stemming from Project Monarch to MKUltra to possibly the thousands of other programs that are out there that we don't know about. Though some people say that the Israelis are still experimenting in this space and how can they program assassins to do their work. Some people connected to the famous guy that just got murdered in front of the public. Perhaps it was an MKUltra connection to that that caused it to happen. I don't know if I believe that, but it is some scary stuff.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier. It's used to split personality. And I know there has been psychological studies of people, and some people claim to have up to 10 different personalities within their psyche. And the one kind of interesting part about it is that each personality can have its own set of characteristics versus both physical and mental. One personality may be allergic to nuts. The other personality, when exposed to nuts, have no visible or physical reaction to them. And a lot of these personalities are unaware of one another. And the theory behind it is once you expose somebody to trauma, and I know you agree with me on this, if you're sleep deprived, you're doped up with LSD, you're getting electroshocked, you're not able to sleep for days on end because they're keeping you awake with amphetamines, I don't think it's too far of a logical jump to suggest that with this drive, this psychic driving, that you can split someone's psyche and program it to be someone completely different than who you are, who God made you to be. And not to go crazy deep into this, the theory is that you can send somebody in their base personality to some event. Somebody there can use a trigger word that has been deeply ingrained into their subconscious, and it can bring forth another quote unquote personality to the surface. And this personality may have a completely different set of skills, a completely different kind of physical chemical makeup, and it can do whatever the program tells them to do, be it assassinations, be it delivering information, being the ability to resist interrogation because this personality doesn't know the information that the other one does. So it gets pretty scary, and these people can use another trigger word to bring forth the primary personality or a completely different personality altogether to come to the surface. I think you saw it with Sirhan when he did assassinate RFK, and there's been plenty of YouTube videos and documented evidence that he says he doesn't know what the heck happened. Like, he is completely unaware of it. People say that when he was there, he seemed pretty normal. Then he did that horrible act, and somehow his base personality came back up, and he was like, I don't know what happened. But obviously, he pulled the trigger. You just wonder, you ask yourself, how many people have been through these programs? And you can research their background and see what institutions they went to, what psychiatrists, psychologists that they've seen. And their backgrounds are sketchy. And I'm not blaming the person for being traumatized and enduring some of this psychological torture. But you have to ask yourself, like, how many people out there have this hidden trigger that may manifest at any time? It's just something to think about. I know it's a bit conspiratorial, but I think there is evidence, at least in psychological research, to suggest multiple personalities do exist. Whether or not they're programmed by the government is a topic that can be argued around, but trauma can induce personality splits.
Yeah, for sure. Whether it's programming or demonic possession. I think people can have these split personality disorders. And a lot of the times people come up with stuff, they come up with a problem so they can sell you the solution, like in order to make you sick, in order to heal you. Much more reason why even if the cure to cancer existed, I'm not sure that they would give it to you because they make so much more money selling you the treatments for it. One of the things I really find interesting about MKUltra is the scale. Many people, when you think of MKUltra, it sounds like a single dusty file in the CIA cabinet, but in reality, it was an umbrella of over at least 149 distinct sub-projects. That's the numbers the CIA's own financial records give us when they were discovered in 1977 and handed to the Senate. These sub-projects were scattered across more than 80 institutions, universities, hospitals, prisons, and private companies. One latter summary puts it at 80-plus known institutions and around 185 outside researchers involved. Now, what that means in plain language is MKUltra wasn't just guys in trench coats. It was woven into the respectable society. Money moved through front groups and foundations with friendly names and then landed on desk of professors, psychiatrists, and lab directors. Some knew the CIA was behind it. Others just saw grant money to study human ecology, stress, or new drugs. And the result is that this entire system, academia, medicine, corrections, became a disturbed experiment, often without people inside realizing they were part of this intelligence project. And as we talk about just some of them, like the widely known ones, whether it be Bluebird or Artichoke or the Montreal Project or what have you, how many don't we know about? And perhaps how many are still going on? Because I think there is still some version of this that is occurring inside the United States even today, whether it's for-profit institutions trying to get on board to make your food terrible, to sell you dietary supplements, to sell you the fix, or the government wanting to control you, essentially institutionalize you to vote them into office or to do whatever. I still think this exists to someday. And yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I want to go back to a point you made earlier. You were saying like whether or not it's a split personality or someone being demon possessed. I think it's very interesting that they use heavy psychedelics on these people. And I do think heavy psychedelic use, be it psilocybin, be it LSD, I think the base mechanism is ultimately very similar. And I do think it opens like a spirit portal in you. And I think it makes you susceptible to being possessed by evil entity. And I think, you know, I think it's interesting that they use that in conjunction with hypnosis and with inducing trauma to kind of lower the person's will to let them give permission for this entity to come in. And so I think it's a good point you made. Sometimes I do wonder how much of that is actually demonic possession, where the person just gives up the autonomy to their body and there's an evil entity actually doing these deeds. And this is not to absolve the person of horrible deeds, but I wonder about that because psychedelics can induce forms of psychosis. I do think it's a spirit portal. There's been countless stories of people having very similar interactions with entities. And DMT is a particularly interesting one where people see the elves and machines, and it seems a bit odd that everyone has the same type of story about these beings that they encounter on DMT. You would think everybody, given their psychological makeup, their chemical makeup, would have different experiences. It's just odd that everyone has, when you boil it all down, the same exact story and description of these entities that they interact with on a DMT trip. So I think that's a good point. I think a split psyche can manifest different personality types and traits in order to have somebody do something that horrific. I think it has a lot to do with the destroying the chemical makeup of one's brain, reducing their will, and allowing influences from the outside to override what they otherwise would allow or do themselves.
I'm not super well read on psychedelics and the thing. Some of it I wonder is obviously visualizations come along with it. And I wonder if they can make you see something, then you will believe it. Kind of like the Project Blue Beam callback. Like you can't believe everything that you see, but I wonder if they can influence you through that design. I think in my circles, one of the most famous things you hear about is, you ever heard of somebody taking too much Benadryl and everybody sees the same person? They call him the Hat Man.
Too much what? I'm sorry. What'd you say?
Yeah. So have you ever seen somebody like in my circles when they're talking about Benadryl, everybody reports seeing the same person. They call him the Hat Man. And that's from, it falls into that DMT family. You take so much, you take it to get high, and everybody sees the exact same figure when they do it.
No, I've heard of the Hat Man. I didn't know that he manifested during Benadryl trips. only thing I know about is the DMTLs.
Yeah, so it's weird that everybody sees the same figure, because you would think if somebody's hallucinating, it'd just be whatever they're thinking about, like whether they're thinking about the beach or whatever, like they would see different things. But I do find it super interesting that they see it that way. And perhaps there is some connections. A lot of people, even like ayahuasca, like it's connected to like these ritualistic experiences in this counterculture world. So I wonder if there is some fine line that opens yourself up to demonic possession, to these different things that you're going to see when you're doing these drugs as well. And then you wonder, like, how could the government do that to us? And I think here's the part that kind of cuts deep. By the time MKUltra started, the Nuremberg Code already existed. After the trials of the Nazi doctors in the 1940s, the world had supposedly agreed on a simple principle. You do not experiment on human beings without voluntary informed consent. That code was widely known in medicine and research by the 1950s, the exact moment the CIA launched MKUltra and its cousins. They didn't stumble over the line by accident, they stepped over it on purpose. Senate summaries later noted that MKUltra type experiments were conducted on unwitting and non-volunteer subjects, prisoners, psychiatric patients, children in state schools, sexual psychopaths in hospitals, people whose consent was either impossible or deliberately bypassed. In other words, while America was publicly condemning the horrors of Nazi medical crimes, part of its own intelligence apparatus were quietly running a parallel playbook under nicer branding. And for people like us, that's not just hypocrisy. It's evidence of a deep structural belief that ethics are optional when power wants answers.
Yeah, I think, I ran across a project I didn't know anything about. It's called MK Often, and it's a less well-documented, often described in secondary sources, exploring black magic, occult, and paranormal phenomena alongside psychological research. And with my belief in what psychedelics are and what doors they open, I think it's a natural progression that somebody observing the studies and the research would draw the conclusion that, oh yeah, there seems to be somewhat of a homogenous being coming through this mental door that we open with psychedelics. So I just think for these people doing this research that it would be a natural progression to start studying black magic, occult, and this paranormal stuff. So I found that interesting. I didn't do a ton of research into it. It's hard to find a lot on it because it's not as well documented, and a part of me thinks that it still is probably, if not in effect underneath that title, underneath a different title that is probably classified and or top secret. I kind of want to touch on like the hypnosis aspect. Do you know much about hypnosis?
Not a whole lot, actually. I don't know a whole lot about hypnosis. I don't even know if I believe in it or not. What about you?
Yeah, so I know a fair amount about self-hypnosis. Essentially, what happens is somebody tries to get you in a super relaxed state, and there's a progression to kind of get you to that point. And then when you're in that relaxed state, the theory is that your mind is more susceptible to suggestions and to behavioral changes. And you hear all the stories about, I went to a hypnosis session to help me stop smoking or drinking or lose weight. But I think when you really boil it down, that it is effective probably less than 10% of the time. So there is a very large portion of the population that you're immune to hypnosis. I do think everybody is suggestible to a degree. And I think you see it with social media, TikTok, these kind of 30-second reels where somebody puts something up there and the algorithm kind of takes control, and over time it can nudge you. But that process takes forever. But hypnosis in and of itself, it can be a very dramatic thing, but it's only really effective for a small part of the populace. And I also found it interesting. I was listening to someone talk, and they were talking about MKUltra, and with the combination of trauma-inducing experiences, the electric shock, the hypnosis, the drug use. He claims, again, I wish I could remember his name, but he claims that of all the people that go into this program unwillingly or unknowingly, that it only really works on about 5% of the people. So you may have, let's just say you have 100 people going into this study or this program, only 5 out of the 100 are actually able to be programmed with a second personality or programmed with a switch to make them do something terrible, do something against their will. So I think they did end up ending the program because of its unethical means, but I think they also ended it because they found a lot of people just were not, they were not able to get to do with what they wanted them to do. I know, like, when you, I don't know from experience, but I know that when people are in LSD and induced trips, they might act and behave a certain way that is way outside of their norm, but that's temporary. But they were looking for people that would be permanently programmed. So I find it interesting. You ever see like a hypnosis session where a guy brings someone on the stage, he starts to try to induct them, give them suggestions, and he'll walk across the stage and touch certain people, pick up their hands, and he immediately kicks them off the stage because that person is not going to be hypnotized. So just know who is suggestible and who isn't. It's interesting to watch if you know what you're looking for. But again, it's only a very small percentage of the population who can actually be effectively hypnotized.
And I think when we look at that, they're like modern day hypnosis and these scam artists, people that we see on TV, that's just with hypnosis alone. Look at this watch or look at this pendulum and count to 10 and you'll be under my control. But I wonder if that percentage goes up with drugs and isolation and sensory deprivation and all these torturous techniques that they use on people. I wonder if that 5-10% goes up to 45 or 50%. Any thoughts?
I think in the moment it does. I think at a certain point, the human psyche tries to protect itself. So if you're in a room and you're being electrocuted, I think it's akin to torture. There's tons of stories about, sad to say, even Americans torturing people and mostly prisoners of war. But at a certain point, you're just going to tell them whatever they want to hear just to get out of the situation. So I don't think torture in the grand scheme of things is actually a useful tool to get information. I can't imagine if I'm tied up in a room, they're waterboarding me, they're playing loud music. At a certain point, I'm not being fed. I'm scared for my life. I'm naked. At a certain point, I'm gonna be like, I'll tell you whatever you want to hear, dude, just stop. And you start out of fear of the torture continuing. You're just going to make an elaborate story in your head, knowing dang well that it's not true, just to get them to back off. So I think in the situation, yeah. Is it true programming? No, I think it's someone's survival mechanism coming to the surface and just trying to get out of the situation. I think when you get outside that environment, you're going to be traumatized. You're going to be scared. But if anything, I think it probably makes you a little bit more docile not to do anything crazy, not to get back into that situation. So I think, I guess to summarize what I'm trying to suggest, I think in the situation, you'll do whatever you can to get out of it. But once you leave that environment, you're not going to continue with the programming, with the exception of a very small percentage. And I think psychedelic use, you get to certain doses, it starts to destroy your brain. You lose memories. You might come off as a psychotic quack, and you might have a propensity for violence that you didn't have. But at a certain point, I think you've destroyed your frontal lobe. So whatever violence you're committing is probably done out of your psychotic break or your brain just being destroyed. And there's really no rhyme or reason to it. I don't think you become an effective tool because, like, you're just a dumbfire missile versus a guided missile. I think a lot of these people just turn into dumb missiles, and the chaos and tragedy that they call are just random one-offs.
Yeah, when we talk about torture and people willing to say anything, we saw that in my background, right? Not that I tortured people, but in law enforcement in general, when they think there was inhuman behavior used to solicit a false confession, and a lot of our constitution laws protect against that today, and calling something cruel or unusual, because people have knowingly confessed to murder or to rape or to whatever after being in a room. Back in the day when investigators were going to interrogate you, they would hold you against your will, so you'd be detained. They would set you in a small room and they would interview you for 12, 15 hours. Still, some interviews today go on for a very long time, and it starts to call into question is, do people just want to get out of this damn room because they've been locked in this single uncomfortable room with maybe like an uncomfortable temperature, no blanket, no water, nothing to eat or drink, and they're willing to say anything because prison is better than being in this cell that you have me in right now. So a lot of the training I did back in the day was to try to prevent that, keep your interviews within reason. Sometimes you had to wait, like you're not going to interview folks. If you just had a murder that happened, they would sweep the crime scene so I could use the evidence in my interview to interrogate. So it might take a couple hours where you set into a room, but eventually I'll come in and we'll talk. But you have to watch that clock to make sure it doesn't get too cruel and unusual. I think the big outcome with, especially with LSD, but other drugs that they were using during this time, was it was very unpredictable of what the outcome was going to look like. I think of the Frank Olson story, the scientist who fell from a window. In 1953, Frank Olson was this government scientist, a biochemist working on biological warfare. He wasn't some drifter. He had a security clearance, a family, a house, and a good salary. Then he went on a work retreat in rural Maryland with CIA colleagues. One night at dinner, without telling him, his boss slipped him LSD into his drink as part of the MK Ultra test on their own people. Over the next 9 days, Frank began to unravel. He told his wife he'd made a terrible mistake. He was agitated, confused, talking about quitting his job. His superiors decided to take him to New York to see a doctor connected to the CIA. Instead of getting better, he kept spiraling. Then at about 2 in the morning in a Manhattan hotel, Frank went out his 10th floor window and hit the sidewalk. The official story is he jumped. Nervous breakdown, maybe fueled by the surprise acid trip. But decades later, after MKUltra started to leak into public view, his family pushed back. They had his body exhumed. A new forensics exam found head and chest injuries that looked more like a beating than a clean fall. Some investigators called the evidence suggestive of homicide. The government eventually admitted he'd been dosed with LSD without consent and paid his family a settlement, but never admitted murder. So you're left with this, a loyal scientist drug by his own side, dead on the sidewalk, and a family that still believes he was silenced because he knew too much about MKUltra and other programs we're already doing. And we have countless horror stories like this, which suggests that if they gave him LSD and he did what they wanted, they wouldn't worry about it. This is success. But it was so unpredictable. And if we see as LSD in our society today, that if the chance of it being successful is 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 100,000 or whatever the case may be, there'd probably be different outcomes in play. But this was so unpredictable. It's such a colossal failure in a way.
I didn't do a whole lot of research into his case, but I wonder why they just randomly dosed him with LSD. But I wonder if somebody dosed him and then knocked him off, like just pushed him or threw him over the ledge. It's a weird story. I think it points back to Operation Midnight Climax, where they would use prostitutes to be a honeypot. So these guys would come up to prostitutes, proposition them, and then the prostitutes would bring them back to a hotel room that had a two-way mirror where the scientists could observe. The girls would dose the Johns with LSD, and then the scientist behind the screen would observe what the guy experienced. So it was, I don't think anyone was particularly targeted in that whole operation. It was just random guys who, for whatever reason, decided one day they wanted to go out and solicit a girl. And I think it was more of a research program just to see the effects of LSD. Again, I don't know why they would do it out in public when they were doing it in controlled situations at universities and hospitals. I find that one a bit bizarre. Unless they were looking for candidates, maybe they had a list of attributes that when manifested during an LSD trip that they were essentially looking to recruit a certain type of person. It harkens back to what we talked about hypnosis. A small percentage of the population is highly suggestible. And maybe it's the same way when you're on an acid trip. Maybe they were looking for a way to recruit Manchurian-like candidates because they displayed certain qualities during the acid trip. That's the only thing I can draw down to it. I just don't know why you would, when you already have controlled environments in play, that you would just seemingly take completely random individuals and experiment on.
I wonder if because they were getting attention. Oh, you can't test at this facility anymore, or doctors or whoever stepped up and was like, yeah, we're not going to be a part of this experimentation. And I wonder if they were running out of options. Like they had to give it to somebody. They wanted to continue their investigation into this drug or into this mind control technique. And that's what they were left with. So they did it that way.
Yeah. But I know even today you can sign up for drug trials. You don't really know what you're getting yourself into. They pay you. Maybe it wasn't that way back then. Who knows? I didn't do enough research to deduce that. But I would think if you wanted to study a drug, you would just have some poor college kid or a poor guy on the street who just needs a quick buck and then dose them. I don't even think you really have to even tell them what you're giving them. You just may have to state something on the research saying we're just studying the psychological effects of drug ABC. So in my mind, it was more of a, it could be a completely wrong opinion, more of a way to see what percentage of the population manifested certain characteristics while under the influence of a psychedelic.
Yeah, so my first thought is I feel like I'm on LSD because I see two versions of you on my screen.
That's odd because my cameras are off.
I know, it says J and then Zero Signal is the other one. So there's three people in this call right now.
Is that the CIA listening to our show? How about you tell us what happened? Give us the full rendition right now. But you ever hear of the Charles Manson MK Ultra link?
Yeah, I actually wanted to go into a story real quick, and then we'll get into the Manson connection. But it jogged my memory because you were talking about people could sign up for these studies and they would get a material benefit, whether it be money or whatever. It reminds me of the James Whitey Bulger story. Before he became a notorious Boston mob boss, Bulger was this young inmate in federal prison in the 1950s. Guards told him there was a medical program looking for volunteers, an experiment that, you know, might help cure schizophrenia, maybe shave time off his sentence if he signed up for this program. What he walked into, according to his later letters, wasn't treatment. It was a series of brutal high-dose LSD sessions, dozens of trips over more than a year. He described feeling like his head was changing shape, reality shedding around him, terror that didn't end with the drug war off. He wrote that he thought he was going insane and that no one explained what was being done to him or even why. Only later did Bulger learn he had been part of MKUltra linked prison experimentation, test on inmates to see how far LSD could push a mind and whether it could be used to control or break prisoners. He said he felt like a lab rat, not a patient, and blamed those sessions for lifelong anxiety and paranoia. In a strange twist, years after his conviction, one of the jurors who helped put him away publicly said she regretted the verdict, not because he was innocent of his crimes, but because she only learned afterward what the government had done to him in the name of research. We're talking about a guy that was pretty horrible, and Whitey Bulger is very famous, and he went through this, and he later became this famous mob boss. And I wonder if that, through that experimentation, altered his reality and he became this like horrible human being from it.
Yeah, I think he actually ended up being a fed too, wasn't he? Like he was a rat, like he would rat out other mob bosses and form the government as to what other gangsters and stuff were doing. Or am I making that up?
No, you're right. He eventually did become a witness for the state, but most high profile folks like him are in some way, shape or form a witness for the state because they're trying to eliminate competition through that fact. It always reminds me of one of my favorite movies called The Departed. And the entire story is at the end is this guy's an FBI informant and he's been able to do whatever the hell he wants because he's knocking off all of his enemies. And that's very true in our reality today.
Wasn't Jack Nicholson's character kind of based on Whitey Bulger?
It was a little bit. I think it was. Yeah,
I think he ended up getting knocked off in prison or something, didn't he?
I don't remember how he ended. I don't remember.
I think he was super old when he was in the federal prison. I think he was being wheelchaired to a medical section, and I guess another mobster had like locks, like those metal locks you put on lockers, and beat him to death with it.
That's a weird.
So to get back to Charles Manson, there was a pretty recent wave of interest. Netflix documentary called Chaos explores whether Charles Manson and his inner circle intersected with MKUltra. The claims center on frequent contacts with doctors and institutions connected to government drug research. We all know he was heavily into LSD and given his followers heavy acid trips. I think there is enough circumstantial evidence to point to the fact that he was part of these experiments. I know he spent a lot of time in prison before his ultimate life sentence. You remember the actor Danny Trejo? He's like that Mexican guy. I think he's Mexican. He's got like the tattoos and kind of plays like an action hero, like villain in a lot of movies. So I listened to an episode of Tinfoil Hat and they had a recording of Danny Trejo talking about an interaction he had with Charles Manson in prison. And he said Charles Manson could hypnotize you to relive drug experiences. To boil it down without getting into too much detail, Trejo said that Charlie came to him and was like, hey, do you want to experience a heroin high? And Danny was like, yeah, why not? And he said Charles Manson hypnotized them and he felt like he had just taken his first hit of heroin. The interesting kind of part of it was like one of the cellmates, Charles Manson tried to hypnotize him to experience it and the guy couldn't. And they asked him like, why aren't you high? And Charles Manson asked the guy, like, have you ever done heroin? And the guy's like, no. He said, I can't hypnotize him because he has no mental recollection or physical recollection of what it's like to be on heroin. So I found that to be a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad people that are wrapped up into this program. And it almost makes me go back to think of the demonic possession, because another famous story is Ted Kaczynski, which we all know is the Unabomber. But Theodore Kaczynski was a teenage math prodigy at Harvard. During his sophomore year, he was recruited into a long-term psychological study run by Dr. Henry Murray at the Harvard Psychological Clinic. On paper, it was to measure how bright young men responded to intense stress. But what actually happened was a three-year program of purposeful, abusive interviews. Kaczynski and other students were asked to share their deepest beliefs and personal philosophies. Then, while wired to monitors, they were subjected to vicious, humiliating attacks on those beliefs, told they were stupid, worthless, contradictory, whether other psychological responses were recorded. And this went on for years and years. There's no open document. There are stamps of the MKUltra label on this case file. And there's no solid evidence that he was given drugs, but the timing, the funding climate, the nature of the work, breaking down identities, studying stress, mapping reactions, have led many researchers and conspiracy thinkers to set this as a psychological cousin to MKUltra. In their narrative, you've got a brilliant, emotionally fragile teenager subject to years of government-linked psychological torment, who then disappears into a shack in the wood and becomes back as America's most infamous domestic terrorist. And if you don't draw a straight line between these two, the story forces an uncomfortable question. How many experiments on young minds left scars that nobody traced until it was far too late? And we're just talking about all these famous, really evil people that killed a lot of people in different ways. And I just wonder, man, if something of taking these drugs really flips that switch into demonic possession, and it makes you do very evil things. Because from Whitey Bulger to Manson to Ted Kaczynski to probably many more that we could talk about did some really horrific things when they were involved in this experimentation.
Yeah. You look at cult leaders, especially back in like the 60s and 70s, and I wonder how many of them have ties back to MKUltra. Like you have Jim Jones. There's some loose connections that he may have been involved in some of the research and studies. And we all know what he did. He went down to South America proclaiming religious message and convinced his followers at the end to all drink the juice and off themselves. So I think a lot of this information, even though they destroyed, what do you make of the 12,000 pages of documents destroyed? What kind of horrible crap are they covering up? And then on the back end of that question, I wonder how many people that they're protecting that are actually true Manchurian candidates that are out there, that are leaders in industry, leaders in religious institutions, cult leaders. It's got to be in the thousands. I don't know why else you would destroy it other than obviously you're trying to cover up the horrible crap you've done and you're trying not to spend the rest of your life in prison. But I think on the other side of that coin is you want to protect your assets in the field. You don't want people to know who has been programmed, who has this information, who is actively using it. And I'm sure a lot of this stuff that happened back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s is now manifesting in our social media, in our television, our news media. And I don't think it's a far leap. The CIA, the FBI, whoever, the government, and just not the US government, but governments all over the world are using the techniques underneath different names, different guises to still perpetuate this program.
Yeah, and you got survivor stories as well. Christine DeNicolai, sometimes called Christine Kleb in like these older online posts, who, you know, she gave public testimony years after the official program was supposed to have ended. And in her statement, she describes being used from childhood into adulthood, roughly 1966 to 1976, in a series of experiments she says involved radiation, drugs, and systematic mind control. According to her testimony, the objective wasn't therapy or research. It was to shape her into a controlled asset, a spy assassin whose mind could be steered through programming, triggering phrases, and trauma. She talked about self-destruct messages, death commands, and later attempts by one of her doctors to reverse the implanted instructions so she wouldn't kill herself on cue. In her words, she spent her adult life trying to survive programming that was designed to either use her or eliminate her. There's no declassified file neatly confirming her story, but her account lives in this gray zone of congressional testimony, survivor networks, and conspiracy archives. The MKUltra world, the stories like Christine's, are treated as human voice of everything the shredded documents don't show us, and what it would feel like to live, what it would feel like to live as a long-term experiment into breaking and rebuilding the mind. And I can only imagine there's many more stories out there that confirm the validity of what the government was trying to do and why they shredded those documents. As you stated, are there more assets out there in the field? I guarantee you there are. Maybe not anymore because we're now in 2025. Maybe they're old or self-destructed themselves already or whatever the case may be. I think there was a big cadre of candidates out there to do their bidding and to be that asset that they needed.
Yeah, another interesting person, Velma Orakow, she was the wife of the Canadian Prime Minister at the time. And she ended up going to one of the hospitals secretly conducting these MKUltra experiments because of postnatal depression. And she was subjected to depatterning and psychic driving. So they ended up suing the government. And in lawsuits, she testified to losing much of her memory and becoming like a child. And she really struggled to rebuild her life afterward. And so she became the lead plaintiff in Orakow versus the United States, suing the CIA CIA over funding of the MKUltra program. So even people with a lot of power somehow ended up in this web of MKUltra. Can you imagine like being depressed or having anxiety or going to a mental hospital or just a regular hospital because you're really struggling, and next thing you know, you're going through this experimentation without your knowledge, just making your condition that much worse? It's got to be a freaking nightmare, man.
Yeah, I think about the patient. In the 1950s, he had checked into a hospital and signed up to get extra privileges, to make some money, and they put him on LSD for 77 straight days, right? Now, I've never taken these drugs, but I can only imagine what that could do to your psyche, or what could that do to your mental state? And I really think that your reality may start blending. If they're just continuously dosing you and you're continually hallucinating, and the hallucinations are getting crazier every time that you experience it. I was trying to think of a fact that I feel like somewhere out there, and folks can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they said if you take LSD like 5 times in your lifetime, you could be almost clinically insane. Like you could have mental issues just from taking it 5 times. I couldn't imagine taking it 77 times in a row. I can't imagine what that would do to you outside of killing you, and you're just an empty, hollow person at that point.
Yeah, I feel like that would just be mental torture. I don't know how your psyche, you'd probably be so adverse to getting psychological help, but you'd almost have to put your psyche back together with the help of someone. I would default to Jesus and reading the Bible to put it all back together, but I can't imagine just the chemical damage you've done to your brain at that point. Like your neurochemicals have to be so jacked up, your brain structures have to be so damaged that I think it would take years and years of therapy and prayer and just intentional self-love to put the pieces back together. I know we're getting close to the end, and that we haven't gotten into a ton of the really weird conspiracies, but I just want to run through a couple of them. Some of them we've talked about, but so we have the theory of the Manchurian Candidate assassins. So, you know, this kind of draws from MKUltra's hypnosis and drug tests on subjects, and it points back to political figures that have been assassinated, and in turn relates to people like Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan, which we've talked about a bit. And some people suggest that we are still seeing some of these MKUltra type assassinations, even modern day, like that kid who tried to assassinate Trump. The whole Charlie Kirk thing is getting super weird, and there's some suggestions that there may have been some MKUltra type people involved in that whole thing as well. And then you talked a bit about Project Monarch, and a lot of this has to do with celebrity mind control. So the theory is that Hollywood stars and musicians are MKUltra slaves programmed via trauma, symbols, and triggers since childhood. And you can see some of these videos where these celebrities quote unquote glitch out, and they have weird physical movements, and they just act super bizarre. I think you can write that off to a lot of things. That could be mental health issues, heavy drug use, just people that big ego that are just acting bizarre just to get clicks. Britney Spears seems to be a pretty big one. She's acting very bizarre. At a certain point too, it seems like these child stars always end up suffering in adulthood. And I wonder, could that be attributed to MKUltra processes? Yeah, of course. But could that be just mental health problems manifesting because when you're a kid, people are telling you how great you're famous, you have a ton of money, you start creeping into adulthood, and next thing you know, nobody wants to hang out with, nobody wants to cast you, nobody wants to hear your music. I don't know. That's a rabbit hole I don't think we have time to get into. And I know plenty of people that have their theories, but how much of it is just drug use? And I think a large proponent of it is people just trying to stay in the forefront of the media with bizarre acts. Like they say, all exposure is good exposure. There's no such thing as bad media, bad press.
Yeah, I think the approach is different, but I think the CIA's approach is different to these control experiments. I think about Master Sergeant James Stanley, who volunteered for experimentation. They gave him a clear liquid to drink, and he didn't particularly hallucinate, but he had like strange reactions. It caused depression. He went on with his life, forgot about it, but his marriage collapsed. His life steered off course, and everything fell apart for him after doing these drugs. And 17 years later, he gets a counterclaim from the United States government saying, sorry about testing these drugs on you. We'll try to support you, get you some mental health treatment and stuff. And he had never known that he had been given these drugs. drugs. He knew he was given something, but he didn't know what he was testing, and he didn't have any crazy hallucinations, but he did have behavioral changes. When we think back to that era, and I could be wrong, but I don't think people knew such powerful drugs existed. A lot of people were smoking pot or doing whatever, but having these crazy hallucinations, really changing and altering your brain chemistry, wasn't widely known at that time. And they didn't have the internet. They didn't have the stuff on TV that people were warning you about or talking about. Now, in modern days, everybody knows about LSD. We're talking about it on this show, doctors trying to sell it to you in micro doses to help with anxiety and depression, much like mushrooms or whatever the case may be. So everybody knows about it to some extent. They know it's this very powerful drug. You're part of the alternate crowd where you think it's going to heal you, or you're part of the crowd that enjoys it as a party favor, or you're like me and you think it's all bad stuff and you should stay away from it because, you know, it's going to have unintended consequences. So I think now you got to change your engagement strategy. If you're thinking like a CIA analyst and you want to continue to swage people's opinions or do your bidding for you. And I think we see a lot of that with the internet, as you touched on, whether it be movies or movie stars or memes online or Reddit forums or social media reels or whatever the case may be. You can change people's opinion and guide them to a certain fact. And if they didn't start out at A, how do we get them to Z to make them believe this way or do this thing? So I think a lot of it continues. And you talked a little bit about how MK Search really wasn't the end. As we talked about, MK Ultra ran from 1953 to about 63 or 64, then it was terminated. But what the fine print says is a lot of work simply moved into a follow-on program called MK Search. And later CIA correspondence and hearings, MK Search is explicitly described as a project that funded the non-terminated portion of MK Ultra activities. So I think we can see that even though all this horrific stuff was uncovered, components of this experimentation continued, and I think we still see it today. As you said, I was going to say Charlie Kirk earlier. I forgot his name for a brief moment, but that's what I was talking about in the earlier conversation. A lot of people think he's tied up to this, and they don't quite understand why some kid like him would assassinate this guy in a public forum, knowing that he's going to be caught. And as he drops down from the building, somebody's been very trained for this, being able to jump off a building and not get hurt and all that stuff and getting the gun by at his age with, again, no training. People call that into question. I find it interesting. I don't know if I believe in that theory or not. I think he was taken up for his trans girlfriend and he thought he was doing some justice by her, but there is a lot of weird facts about that story.
I don't know what to think about that story. The more I live my life, the more I see just the weird, bizarre stuff that happens out there in this world. I always feel like there's a patsy. It's the guy that, to a certain extent, he agrees to be a part of the quote-unquote operation. And this isn't specific to the Kirk thing. This is just in general with all these high-profile type of assassinations or high-profile, high-impact events, that there's a group of people and one unwitting, unlucky guy is the guy who doesn't know it, but he's the guy to take the fall. So though he may have been on that roof with a gun, it doesn't mean necessarily he's the one that took the shot. Again, I don't really know. I try not to pay a lot of attention to it. Part of it, I think, is a little bit of a distraction from stuff that's going on, because that whole thing is grown legs and is taking a walk on its own. But I kind of want to circle back to the whole marijuana thing too. Like, the marijuana back in the 50s, 60s, 70s was rather low THC content. The marijuana they're creating today genetically has an astronomical amount of THC compared to the stuff that was naturally occurring in the earth. And high enough doses, THC can be a psychedelic and cause psychotic and schizophrenic type behavior in individuals. Just looking at the data, if you're prone to psychotic induced THC, if you're prone to being psychotic, you will have a sevenfold increase of actually triggering a psychotic break if you ingest too much THC or over a long enough period of time. And if you're not prone to having psychotic breaks or prone to psychosis, you have a fourfold increase to experiencing a psychotic episode. So right there in and of itself is a scary statistic. With all these drugs being streamlined and mainlined, and now the whole psychedelic thing is quickly falling in the same footsteps, it makes me wonder how many of us are MK altering ourselves. You take these drugs, there's even studies testing the water supply, and there's small amounts of SSRIs in the water. So if you drink water out of your faucet, or if you're drinking, heck, water even out of your filter, you're getting microdoses of SSRIs, like it or not, in most areas, especially big metropolitan areas. So I wonder, with the combination of social media, the media, and everything else you interact with in your daily life that revolves around the computer or your television screen, how many of us are actually being programmed slowly over time and don't even realize it? I feel like this world is more divided today than it was 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Heck, even when we were growing up, the world didn't seem this divided. And I wonder how much of it is driven by the algorithm, by AI. And you've seen plenty of newscasts, plenty of videos that compare the newscasts, and the news anchors literally verbatim recite the same script regarding certain events and certain topics. So you have that repetition. You have people that are either intentionally smoking marijuana or intentionally taking psychedelics that are making their brains more suggestible. And then people that are on SSRIs willingly. And then people drinking or taking microdoses of SSRIs through the water because they choose or don't need these other chemicals in their lives. So part of me thinks that we are MK-altering ourselves to a certain extent, at least a vast majority of the population is, especially with this tribalistic nature that we've devolved into over the past 20 years.
Yeah, it's people, they go after the pharmaceutical option rather than nature. I deal with anxiety quite a bit. And one of the ways I essentially cured it was I realized that I was deficient in magnesium. And I started taking magnesium instead of taking the drugs the doctors wanted to sell me. And it did a world of good for me. And a lot of these deficiencies in diet that we see today can be linked to deficiencies. And not to go off topic here, but I just found it fascinating because I just recently started taking magnesium supplement. And I found out, because I'm allergic to gluten, your body does not produce magnesium very well. And most people that have celiac disease are deficient in magnesium. Like they just can't gain enough through their diet. I basically cured my anxiety by taking magnesium. And it's just exciting. So I'm just throwing it out there. If you have anxiety, maybe you should try magnesium. It might be helpful. But to get back to it, I think as you scroll through certain corners of the internet, you do see people dissecting music videos, fashion shoots, award shows, pointing out butterflies, checkerboard floors, broken dolls, one-eye imagery, and cages. Now, to most viewers, it's just edgy or art direction, but to MKUltra conspiracy fans, it's a vocabulary of symbols linked to monarch-style programming. In this theory, some celebrities aren't just entertainers, they're programmed assets with handlers, managers, doctors, and security people whose real job is to monitor and maintain the conditioning. Public breakdowns, sudden rehab visits, bizarre interviews, or blank stares on camera are labeled as glitches or deprogramming attempts. And when an artist complains about not controlling their own image or music, it's read not just as a business dispute, but as a hint that they're under deeper control. Think Britney Spears here. The version of MKUltra turns the entertainment industry into this kind of psychological theater, the ideal that the same symbols used to trigger or reinforce programming inside the subjects are pushed out to the public as well, conditioning the audience as a lighter level. The line between this is a music video and this is a ritualized message blurs those lines together. And even if you don't buy it, it changes how you look at a constant stream of curated images we're all soaking in. Or everybody's like, I love this song. And I'm like, have you ever listened to the lyrics? Like, they're awful. You probably shouldn't be playing that, but people eat into to. And I think if you talk about shooting your friends down the street in a cool rap video, eventually maybe you might think that's okay.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the repetition. Like, you are what you think. And if you listen, like they study in MKUltra, psychic driving, it's the same message repeated over and over again. And you know how it is. Like, you'll listen to a podcast, you'll listen to music when you're working out or taking a walk or just chilling, and you trance out. You go into a theta wave state. And children spend a ton of time in the theta wave state below the age of 7. That's why they're able to learn so much more efficiently than we are. Their brains are more pliable. But as adults, you don't go into theta as often as a child does. But when you're tranced out, you've done it before. You're driving and you're like, wow, I traveled 15 miles when I feel like I've maybe only should have traveled 2. That's a trance. But when you're listening to something, listening to a message, it may be in different words depending on the music you're listening to. But when you boil the message down, violence, money, fame, power, whatever, is starting to ingrain in your psyche. And then as deeper it gets ingrained, the more it's going to affect over time, and it's going to affect how you react, because, you know, you've been mad before, you've reacted in a way that's not cool, and everyone does it. But sometimes I think those messages build that reaction pattern deep down inside. So when you become in a heightened emotional state, your reaction is already pre-programmed instead of stepping back, observing the situation, and then responding versus reacting. So I think, and it's interesting that this music is geared geared toward younger people. So I think it's taking into account that the younger you are, the more that this programming may take root into your psyche, and the people, the powers that be, can manifest, program, and trigger those reactions in somebody who is sub 25. Your prefrontal cortex doesn't fully develop until you're 25 years old. I just find it pretty convenient that most of this media that we consume is really geared toward those 25 years and younger.
Yeah, 100%, man. I think whenever you have drugs, money, and people willing to do ugly things for it, you are leading towards a culture of shit. And if it's government sanctioned, it's even worse, because they can get away with it and not get prosecuted.
Yeah.
It's almost like people are trying to drive towards a great reset.
Yeah. So I think this is where we pose the question. What do you make of all this?
It's a good question. Obviously, MKUltra is real. I think it's very evil. I think it's been proven that it's very evil. And I don't think it stopped in the 60s or 70s. I don't think it ended with MKSearch. I think it goes on today in our society, in the United States, and across many societies across the globe. Hopefully, in the United States, we have some constraint, like we've learned some lessons, and after violating the Nuremberg laws, different things. So hopefully we learned some lessons and it's not as bad. But what I can say is that post-World War II, we really saw the moral decline of our society here in the United States, and these bad values are being pushed out and into mainline narratives. I worry about the future that my kids, what country are they growing up in? I worry about that, and getting somebody into office that are going to make the right decisions. I don't even know if that's a possibility anymore. It just seems that people get more extreme and willing to take more risk and more chances. And if we don't end with a boom with World War III, perhaps we just stutter out. We've seen great societies fall before, really great in terms of conquering, like the Roman Empire, among many that have fallen when they seemingly seemed impossible for them to fall. I think MKUltra started it, but again, I don't think it ended there. I think it's highly evil. I think it's demonic. I think there's just so much badness about this, Jay. I'm almost lost for words. And not only when we talk about the 60s and 70s and the moral degradation of our country, back then it was experimentation. And a lot of people weren't doing the same drugs. Now people take it willingly. Let me just sign up for this. If somebody said, I'm going to stand out on a street corner and hand out LSD and you can get it every day for free. If you're somewhere in California or wherever, there's probably going to be a long line of people that are going to be waiting for their handout of daily LSD. People are just willing. It's almost like they're brainwashed to think that drugs are cool, that alcohol is cool, that all these things are really cool to do and they're fun, and that's the only way I'm going to have fun. And I'm not sure what that next step's going to look like, but it's all bad, man. It's all bad.
Yeah, man, I agree. We used to live in a culture where if you took drugs, you were shunned. And now modern day culture, you're almost shunned if you think taking drugs is bad. It's scary, like you said. People will line up around the street, heck, sell their souls literally and figuratively to get high. And it scares me because marijuana and its derivatives become mainstream. You can pretty much get it wherever you want without having to go into a back alley and paying some sketchy guy $20 for a bag of marijuana. You can go into a store now and buy drinks that have it in it. And now it seems to be in popular culture via Joe Rogan and a bunch of famous people championing the use of psychedelics to expand your mind and make your mind more neuroplastic and awaken your third eye or whatever BS they're trying to sell. I think we know, and it's the government even admits it, MKUltra was a real program. They very clearly stated their goals as a truth serum, a way to erase memories, a way to instill second, third, fourth personality types in the people. And those 12,000 documents that were destroyed, I think they were probably more than likely sold off to big corporations, big media, big pharma. And I think you're seeing the natural after effects today, where again, drug culture has become normalized. Social media has become normalized. I think you see the hypnotic patterns in music and television in these social media apps. And in tandem with drug use, SSRI use, that is both intentional and unintentional, I think most people MKUltra themselves now. And I'm a little bit concerned as to what research they're doing now, because there's still programs going on that are not declassified. And I wonder what other ways they're coming up with to manipulate the populace. We look at conspiracy through a biblical lens, and it seems like stuff is starting to line up with biblical end times. They talk about the use of pharmakia and how it's normalized. it's pretty much normalized across the world. And I often wonder at the, in the end times where people, there's a mass falling away from the faith, the Christian faith, and people worshiping the beast, the Antichrist, the one world religion, one world government. How does that happen? It has to be something pretty freaking convincing that happened to make that whole thing come to fruition. And I think we probably see, if not the mid-stage or outcome as to how that happens with, like we stated, the drug use and the constant repetition through media to instill a message into your psyche and make you highly suggestible to the intended outcome.
Yeah, it's no longer the drugs. It's the algorithm pushing what you should consume and what you should believe. And all those things. Thank you. Guard your hearts. What do you want to close with tonight?
Yeah, man. Same thing I always do. Jesus loves you. We love you. I love you, brother. Root yourself in wisdom and discernment. Don't believe everything you hear. And unfortunately, now I have to kind of state the other part. Don't believe everything, because now you can look at stuff on the TV and there is a good chance it may be AI generated. And as time progresses forward, that's just going to become more and more believable. And they'll hit a certain point where you're not going to be able to tell if that thing you're seeing on TV is real or if it's fake.
Call back to the dead internet through our last episode. And how much more would we believe it if we're all doped up on LSD and these different drugs that they're pushing today? It would feel even more real. But I agree with you, bro. I love you. I think it's been a good episode. It's always eye-opening. People, I've never seen Stranger Things, but I think you said talks about MK Ultra or something. And you just got to have discernment. And when you can discern things of a clear mind, body, and spirit, you can make appropriate choices. And it's going to be important, and it's going to grow even more important as the days, years, and decades go forward. I think the good thing, the alert for our audience, is that next week our first interview is coming up, and we have a whole series of interviews going to be right on the back end of it. So we have a lot of exciting guests lined up. We're excited to talk with them and explore their stories and how it connects to what we do here at Zero Signal. But yeah, we're going to have a ton of fun, and had a ton of fun with you today, Jay. Love you, and we will see you next week. Until then, we are Zero Signal.
We're out.
We've hit the 0 hour. That's a wrap on this week's transmission. New episodes drop weekly, so stay tuned and don't miss the next signal. Follow, subscribe, and spread the word. You've been listening to Zero Signal. We're out.